Greetings, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Bill Grant, co-chair of the club's Health and Medicine Member-Led Forum, and chair of this program. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Dr. Linda Clever. Linda Halls Clever, MD, is a clinical professor of medicine at UCSF and a member of the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences. She founded the not-for-profit organization Renew 16 years ago, and is author of the fatigue prescription, Four Steps to Renewing Your Energy, Health, and Life. She likes good company, good conversations, and good cookies. And now, Linda.
Thanks, Bill. And I wanted to thank you especially for your volunteering for this distinguished club. He's been doing this kind of organizing for 7 years. He's here at least twice a month and working on email and making arrangements and connections and so forth in between time. And I think that much of our society, much of our country depends on people going an extra mile. And you do that regularly, and I'm very grateful, along with your work on vitamin D, which I just so happen will be mentioning today, and this is not an ad for him or for me or for vitamin D, but nonetheless. Thank you all also for coming through a threatening weather, occasional downpours, and again, I'm just honored that you're here. I hope that what we'll do is have a profound time together, a fascinating time, a surprising time, and that you will leave with some very practical new ways perhaps about thinking about challenges and managing them. I did want to ask, and this is very participatory, so the first thing is who had the most harried time getting here today? Anybody in Iraq? Anybody get a ticket yet? Of course, you don't know yet, do you? So you're just all here, calm and great. It's also wonderful to see some very particular friends here, which is a pleasure in so many ways. And so thank you for coming, too. You know, I think a lot about me. I just wanted to say that my training is in internal medicine, infectious diseases, occupational health, and community health. And so my perspective is on how lives and work and health all interact. I have just not noticed that despite claims to the contrary, that when people have trouble at work, they leave the trouble at work, and when they have trouble at home, they leave the trouble at home. I just haven't noticed. I've noticed just a whole lot of sloshing back and forth. And so part of what we're going to do is actually everything that we do will apply to your life. Some of you may know Rachel Remen, who actually is a good friend and taught my husband and me when we were at Stanford, because she was in pediatrics when we were students. Not that there's that much difference in age at all. But she said finding meaning in medicine, which is what her involvement is about finding meaning in medicine. What Renew is about is finding meaning in life. And so we're going to be talking about everything we talk about, again, applies to your life, to your work, to your neighborhood, to your family, and so forth. Also, just to expand a little bit, so you know who you're dealing with here, my husband's also a physician, our daughter's a physician, and she's on the faculty at Johns Hopkins, and she and her husband have twins who were 3 years old on February 14th, and who are very, 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 very cute. And so, just so you know that. As Bill said, 16 years ago or so, with the help of actually people in this audience, we started Renew. And the idea is, how can people stay at the top of their game? How can we be resilient, move forward, continue our curiosity, which is an awfully important aspect of learning and progress, despite the inevitable disappointments. Mine happened to be a series of tragedies. My mother died. Our house was broken into, and things that she had given me were destroyed and vandalized. And my father died. I lost two jobs, not because of merit, but because of what was happening in health care. And father died, and my husband was diagnosed with carcinoma of the prostate, and that all happened in 18 months. And he's fine now, and that's great. But it caused another friend who's here to have our house checked out for feng shui, and that was a great gift and made a difference in our lives, too. So we decided with John Gardner, who was a great friend and mentor, he and I had been trustees at Stanford together for a long time. John had written extensively on excellence, leadership, and renewal. And so he said, you know, this is a perfect time to put theory into practice. We all know that we need to refresh and renew. If we take sometimes better care of our cars than we do of ourselves. At least our cars, we either recharge them or we fill them with gas or we fill the windshield wiper stuff with windshield wiper stuff. What about us? So then we started studying and doing research and figuring out and listening and listening and listening and listening to people about across the country how people renew and refresh and keep going despite the kinds of things that happen to us. Or sometimes, I don't know if this has ever happened to anybody here, sometimes, whether it's tragedy or disappointment, sometimes people just get bored. Just bored. Which can be just as much a drain on your energy as anything else. So there are things out there that may drain our energy, and that's one of the things that Renew is about. So these are some questions. How many people here work? I'm expecting every hand to go up, please. Every hand up. Let me rephrase the question. How many people here work? Okay. How many people get paid for their work? Uh-huh. How many people don't get paid for their work? Uh-huh. And that's the point. Economists say, you know, work is what you get paid for. Physicists say work is force times distance. I had a friend who said, work is called work because it's work. And I've just noticed that changing a diaper in anybody, no matter how old or young they are, is work. And you may not get paid for it. So I'm just asserting that everyone here works. Let me just ask what kinds of things that you are working at, whether paid or unpaid. Just shout it out.
Chemical research.
Clinical research, yes.
Procrastinating and putting things off. More than doing that.
So you're polishing your skills at procrastination.
Right.
Uh-huh. But you're here. That's a good sign. Yeah. But you're here. You've started. You've already started. You have started. What else?
Arbitrator.
Elder care and child care. Does that mean grandchildren and mother? No.
Good.
Okay. What else?
Feeding the homeless.
Feeding the homeless. Public art.
Public art.
Nonprofit administration. Going to the gym. That's work. That is work. I mean, shoot, Tai Chi is work, man. I mean, you do it right. And someone else said something.
Educational consultant.
Well, and there are more and more and more. And because everybody here also is doing more than whatever that work is. And that's what I another question that I wanted to have or wanted to ask. And now, one of the things that I can't do, among many things that I can't do, I can't spell very well. So this is going to make you all feel very good. So what else are you juggling besides your work?
Working on my income taxes.
Income taxes, yes.
Lawsuit.
Yuck.
Family.
Is that what you said? Yeah. Juggling. Yeah.
Cooking.
Moving, like moving house, moving office, moving. Sorry, yes?
I think you'd say relocation.
Uh huh. Okay.
Moving house and work, yes.
House and work. All right, then.
Travel.
Juggling. What are you juggling?
Getting rid of clutter.
You know, that's really hard to do by yourself.
I paid some $4,000 to help me.
And
he still got the clutter. I got to do it myself.
Oh. Well, then. Other things that you're juggling. Social calendar. And does that mean paying for it or helping them decide what they're going to do? Pay, so that's money and decision and support. I mean, support, moral support, all the things that you do when somebody's trying hard. Yeah, what else?
Church.
I'm just, these are in no particular order, so I'm just, yeah. Budgets, does that mean work and home or?
Sure.
Both.
Volunteering.
And what?
Volunteering.
Health issues.
Hobbies.
Sorry?
Hobbies,
okay.
Exercise.
Email. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
TV. Oh my gosh. Internet browsing. Facebook. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, sorry.
Household
management. I was wondering, when you're cooking, do you also go out and buy the stuff, or do you just, I mean, yeah, no, I'm asking you, weren't you the one who cooked?
No.
No, you were, I'm sorry. Do you go out and buy, sorry? So the whole process. Okay. And household everything. Sorry?
CME,
that means continuing medical education. If you don't do it, you don't have a license anymore. So that's kind of a by way of possibly of some interest. Yeah. And you have to do 25 hours. Hey, what?
Bed
a year.
Care.
Bed to care?
Yes.
Pet. Yes. Okay. So, and it could go on and on. And let me just say that, and it does go on and on. These are kind of things that... you're juggling that seem manageable. We haven't talked about grief. We haven't talked about
dementia.
So let's just add those on: grief, dementia, depression, and boredom, and you know, and what's next, and anxiety. So, however, this is not a bad picture. This just is the picture. This is what we're juggling, which then brings me to remember and to tell you, Philo of Alexandria was a truly great philosopher 2,000 years ago, and much of what he did, his thinking was absorbed into Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. He's kind of one of those guys. I've kind of thought that I would have liked to be on a desert island with him. I mean, he must have been one interesting dude. Well, one of the things that he said because of this, and this, what those who've said anything have said one or two things, and you're really juggling 5 or 10 things. He said, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. And sometimes I ask, what's on your mind? And some of these things, and in particular pet health and child health and parent health and so forth, come up. And then someone says,
I have a child or two or three in Afghanistan. And you think, oh. And you know, it could be the clerk at the Safeway who does too. And it could be the person who helps you at the service station, or a passerby on the sidewalk could have things like that on his or her mind. And so it makes us a little bit, and it also could be a coworker, also could be a family member, someone we may not know too well, or a child's girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever it might be. We don't know much about other people. And this is just kind of one remembrance of cutting them some slack, by the way. So let me just also ask a couple of other questions. This is just to getting to know each other. Now we know something about who works, which is everyone, whether or not you're paid. We know that everybody is juggling things, some easier and some harder. Then let me just ask, does anybody here have family members? Just curious. Okay. Does anybody here have any friends? Just curious. Okay. Who did that? I didn't see that. You did. You are working too hard, buddy. Anybody here have partners or spouses or did or hope to? Anybody here have pets? I can remember actually when our daughter Sarah was growing up, we were awfully, awfully busy, so the only pets she ever had were brine shrimp. But that's probably different from a cocker spaniel. But she did very well with the brine shrimp. Anybody here have plants at home, indoors or outdoors or whatever? So the point about that is you're also juggling all that, of course, and that somebody is depending on you, and that's why you're important. And that's why you're here. And that's why we're going to be talking about what we're talking about. Is how can you be at the top of your game? How can you be an excellent juggler? Because you have people who look to you either as leaders or as family members or as neighbors to help them too. I mean, we're all kind of in this together. I think of us as redwood trees. You know, redwood trees have a very shallow root network. The reason they stand up is because they lean on each other. And that's more like human beings than perhaps we realize. So tonight, you've already figured it out. We're there's going to be participating. Goal is how to be a skillful juggler, as advertised, healthy and eager and curious and resilient. And I hope that we'll give you some equipment to take home. First of all, we're going to be exchanging ideas because we already have. I wanted to tell you about the four steps to renewing, just to get that kind of on the table, because you're also going to be doing that with the renewal meter starting it. The first is, and renewing means, first of all, why bother to renew is because so much depends on you, not as a burden, but because you're in the game. You're playing in this game. So the first step is awareness. That is, what's going on around me? What's going on around you? The second step is reflection, to think about it. How is it feeling? Is it working? How's everybody doing? Etc. The third step is something that's rare these days, and we've already talked about it a little bit, internet and TV and Facebook and Twitter and so forth and so on. The third is conversation. And by conversation, I mean conversation. That is sitting down, maybe over a cup of tea or whatever cup of you'd like to have, and having a give and take. The word conversation is really quite fascinating. Con means with, as in consensus. And turn means, and versus means turn. And so when you're entering a conversation, it means that you are willing to have a new idea. You are willing to listen and to share and to play badminton here with some ideas. So it's not a rant and a rave. It's not a ministerial kind of a thing. It is a conversation. It's not email. It's not Twitter. It's not Facebook. It is a half an hour or an hour, and then it's maybe another time. That's what I'm talking about, a conversation with. Could be with a friend, could be with a partner or a spouse, and it could be with a total stranger on an airplane. And I've had that happen to me too, although I tend not to talk to anybody on the airplane. But nonetheless. Actually, I just should mention, I mean, it's because life is so strange and fascinating. For reasons unclear to me, I was talking with this fellow sitting next to me on the airplane, because I don't do that, because I always have something to do. And it turned out that our fathers both worked for the JCPenney Company and both had been store managers for the JC, and therefore we had moved around the country many, many times. And we were talking earlier, you know, the places that I've lived and so forth is because my father worked. He and I had exactly the same childhoods. We just weren't related. We'd never met before. But it's nice to know somebody who had the same childhood. So that can happen. At any rate, so awareness, reflection, conversation, and yeah.
What about talking to yourself? I know this extremely successful woman that talks to herself for a half hour to an hour in the morning. She wants me to do it, and I don't want to do it for some reason. Is that successful, talking to yourself?
Well, it seems to work for her. And actually, it is... One of the things that we know about learning, and this is a little bit off track, One of the things we know about learning is that the more senses you use at the same time, the better. She may be reinforcing herself by hearing it. Some people are much more auditory than they are visual and vice versa, and some it's kind of split and right brain, left brain. Some people learn by seeing pictures of things. Other people learn by reading. Other people learn by hearing. And she may just know that she can coach herself. And if you're not a good conversationalist with yourself, you're probably not a good conversationalist with anyone. But you don't have to go around talking out loud, and you don't have to do it for half an hour, an hour. You can. That's one of the things about making some changes, is little steps is a good idea. You could try it, you know, for a minute or two, see how it goes. I remember listening to the Dalai Lama teaching a group about meditation, and he said, well, meditation is a good thing. He said, I'm a busy man. He said, and which is just as well, because I start to meditate, and I can meditate for about 20 minutes before I start to itch. That made me feel much better. So you just do, you take little steps, and you see how it goes. Nothing wrong with it. I mean, nobody is going to institutionalize you for talking to yourself, depending on where you do it.
Can I ask a question?
Yes. Yes. We're going to be doing the renewal meter very soon. Yeah.
As meetings, interviews, and conference calls, we don't say meetings, interviews, or conference calls. We say we're going to have a discussion. What's the difference between a discussion and a conversation?
Well, although etymology interests me a whole lot, I don't want to get into too much or too deeply. But conversation, again, turning with. A discussion is we're getting things on the table. We may or may not be trying to come to a conclusion. We may or may not be. There may be. It has kind of a didactic implication of this is how we do things. A conversation is a much more relaxed sort of. Is not used in business much, because it's not done in business much. A conversation, turn with. And let me just say about communication. Communication is 7% words. What are the next two things? Body language is 55%. What's the last? Tone of voice. So there you go. So where does that leave email? I'm just saying. You can get into more deep yogurt with email and with... You know, capital letters in email to emphasize it. That's what I thought it was until Sarah, our daughter, told me a lot of people think when you use capital letters, you're yelling. Well, if you didn't know that etiquette, you know, you could be irritating a whole lot of people.
Skype could work.
Oh, yeah. But is that email? No. What's Skype? Right. It's a phone call. Well, but or picture. You were thinking with picture. Yeah. So at least with a phone call, you get tone of voice. Don't you love it? I mean, people are on their phone. They're going like, of course, they're driving at the same time. And their hands are going all over the place. Nobody can really see them. But, okay. So, Just kind of talking about what we're going to be doing tonight. Thank you. Awareness, reflection, conversation, and then plan and act. And it's not as if it's just a straight arrow. Just you do one, and then you do the next, and then you do the next, and then ha-ha. It's because the arrows go back and forth, and sometimes they go around. So you become aware of something, and then you think about it. That's reflection. And you think, and that makes you aware of some other dynamics that might be going on. And then you might want to have a conversation with somebody or somebodies, and it could be a counselor, or it could be a friend or a family member or a perfect stranger. And then that makes you aware of some other things, and you reflect on. So it's not zip, just a straight line shot. It is a much more meandering sort of a way, which is the way life is. It's rarely like the meteor that exploded over Russia, you know, I suddenly understand. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes that happens here. You do. But when you plan and act is the fourth step. What's interesting about that is because change is hard if you need to make some changes. How many people here love change? Love. And you are either artists or venture people or starters or something like that. How many people here hate change? Right, that goes into procrastination too. And most people are kind of in between. So that when you're planning, it's important, if there's going to be a change involved, it's important to plan how you're going to make that change, and then you can act. So that by the time you get to making a change, it's more like stepping off a curb than jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. We're talking about being gentle and smart with yourself and kind to yourself. Remember, Philo of Alexandria, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. Well, it may be you. So be kind to you. I hope that we will get to the part about that we talked about, how to say yes and no at the right time. And we will we'll talk about how do you get to that. Actually, we will. So we've talked about everything that we do here applies to home. It applies to work. It applies to Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. It applies to soccer league. It applies to your neighborhood, so forth and so on. And with that, what I would like to do is, I know some of you have already filled out the renewal meter, but I just would want to take some time for you who haven't filled it out to fill it out. If you want to, you don't have to do it. And does everybody have one? Who doesn't have one? You don't have one. I'll just take this. And got it. Did everybody have one? We have an extra here. And I know that some of you have already done it. Okay, so I'm just going to be quiet for a while. And,
Could you define refreshing your body and
spirit? It's not work. And it's not just the same as brushing your teeth or combing your hair or, you know, kind of, as we say in medicine, activities of daily living. It is giving yourself a boost. It's filling your tank. It's doing something that will, going beyond just getting through the day because you don't want to get moss on your teeth.
Could you give us two or three examples of that, please?
Well, one is, what do you love to do? So it's doing something that you love to do. Or you might not love to do it, but you might know that it'd be really good for you, and actually at the end of it you feel better. So it could be exercise, it could be reading, it could be... I was with a group not too long ago, and, you know, what do you love to do? And someone said shop, and, you know, that does it every time. Every time she shops, she felt better. And I said, what do you do in a bad economy? And she said, well, I buy something and I return it the next day. Not so sure that's... Well, at any rate. So does that help? I mean, it's something that you know that every time you do it, it could be calling your brother, it could be calling a friend, it could be driving out to the great highway and looking at the waves. Every time, something, and it doesn't have to be that big a deal, but that's one way to be thinking about it. Every time you do it, what does it do for you? It lifts you.
Massage.
Some people would say chocolate, of course. Yeah. How often do you? Yeah.
3.4 miles.
Back and forth, is that 3.4 miles? Yeah. Things like that. May not be able to do it every day, but it carries on for a while. Got some. So I'm just being a little bit quiet while people are filling this out who haven't. Do you have one? You did it, okay. And I'm not going to ask your scores.
I'm the lowest.
No, don't. I'm not going to ask your... And I would say, and again, I know that I'm interrupting your thinking, but I'm trying to please both elements here, who've done it and who haven't done it. Because we've already pointed out that you have people or things in your life that depend upon you, those are reasons to stay at the top of your game. And what happens when people get exhausted, whether it's medically exhausted or spiritually exhausted or emotionally exhausted or sleepless or... There are many ways that can get you tired. What happens is you lose your ability to engage. You lose your ability to bounce back. You lose your ability to juggle, and at home and at work. And there are two things that fade very subtly, and people don't notice for a long time that this has happened. One is creativity, and the other is curiosity. Because they don't seem to be quite so essential as breathing, for example. But for those of us who like to be in the forefront or be engaged or make a difference in the world or have some sort of, or have goals, whatever they might be, not being creative and not being curious are very important signs of trouble. And if we had time, we would ask about... signs of trouble. Let's just do that for a minute. I'm just going to put this over here. What have you noticed in your among your friends, or yourself, or acquaintances, or you read in a novel, or that are signs of trouble? Now, let me tell you something about medicine, medical education. When we're talking about things that are kind of private, like you're in psychiatry class, and the question is, has anybody here had a psychotic break or something like that? Not a whole lot of people are going to admit it. So we talk about our cousins. We may not have had a psychotic break, but our cousin had. And boy, let me tell you what my cousin went through. So the signs of trouble may be your cousins, or it may be... you know, something you read in a book or have seen in other people, or it could be yourself too. So when you're getting exhausted, when you're getting run down, when you're out of energy or curiosity, what kinds of symptoms do you notice?
A friend who was an artist now just watches TV all day on the couch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. So artist watch TV on couch. Okay. Hey, what? 12 hours per day.
Living on wine and ice cream.
Wine plus ice cream. Okay, then. Yeah, what else? Anger. At? Any? Yeah, fly off the hook. Could be anger at yourself. Just, okay, what else? Sleeping badly. Okay.
Sleeping too much.
So Too little? Too much?
Procrastinating.
I'm going to talk about that just a little bit. Procrastinating.
Crying jags.
Crying jags. Lost interest in things you used to like. Sometimes interests can change, but sometimes everything just gets kind of like oatmeal and there are no raisins in it.
Depression.
What about physical symptoms? Anybody's ever heard of
headache.
What kind?
Weight gain.
Oh, weight gain. Yes. And or loss, increase, decrease. Right. Yep.
Fatigue.
Yes. And that could be just an. It may not be a sleep thing. It just may be everything again. Blah. It's the illness. Lack of focus.
Avoiding responsibility.
Avoiding responsibility. Because you just may not, and I'm kind of making this up, but you avoid responsibility because you don't have any ideas about, bless you, how to fix it. I mean, your creativity has drained away. Your new ideas, some of it can just be general low energy, but some of it, what can even happen first is an inability to think new thoughts. Well, we could go on and on, and I can remember asking not too long ago a group of medical students about their signs of trouble, and one of them said, you know, I just walk around pissed off, kind of like touch me, buddy, you know, let's see what happens. Yeah. So this is an awareness list. You have your own list, and I would suggest that when you go home, you think about your own signs of trouble and your dear ones' signs of trouble. This is where you become kind of like a detective. People act the way they do for reasons, and you may not know the reasons, but you can notice the behavior. Be aware of that. And then once you're aware of something, that's the first step in renewing, once you're aware of it, then you can start to do something about it. If you don't notice it, it's, you know, if the tree falls in the forest, doesn't make a sound. Well, not if nobody can hear it, in a way. So now, what I wanted to ask about the renewal meter was, you may have questions, just as you did, about what does that question mean? But did any question kind of jump out at you? You wondered why was it there, or that really resonated, as they say in California, or made sense? Yeah.
Why is laughter important?
Oh, why is laughter important? Well, it turns out that the absence of laughter is one of the biggest signs of trouble there is. Now, if you never did laugh, you don't count it. But if you used to laugh and you stopped laughing, it's a big sign of trouble. So one is it's an awareness thing. The other is that it is we know that even a smile will release endorphins, much less a laugh. And so we recall people who, in illness, have sought out funny movies and so forth and so on, because it lifts spirits, it provides energy, and the absence of it, is a danger signal, is a sign of trouble. How many people here have read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl? Would you recommend it to others? A profound book. Viktor Frankl was a psychiatrist who survived the Holocaust, and his whole family was killed. And at the end, he wrote Man's Search for Meaning. One of the things that he did was he established sense of humor workshops in the death camps. Because he said, if you can laugh at something, and this is the third point, if you can laugh at something, it changes everything. It lifts you up out of the muck. It changes your direction. It may build community. It may bring people together. It spread. There are any number of things that laughing does.
Yeah, I know it works the best of anything because of Bob Hope and George Burns, the two comedians, the only two entertainers that both live to be 100.
Right. And often at each other. Right. So that the other thing is that kindergartners laugh about 60 times a day. You know, we laugh, you know, on a good day once, you know, or a half. Well, what happened? Well, of course, we had to start putting peanut butter on their bread and supplying oxygen and so forth and so on. So, so there are a lot of elements in the laughing part. Any other questions or, yeah?
I thought number 10 was interesting about most of the other questions were focused on yourself as opposed to encouraging someone else.
Yeah, all of these questions are really based on piles of anthropology and psychology and sociology research and so forth and so on, and then testing it and testing it and testing it and refining it. The one about encouraging people, it turns out that being encouraged is one of the glorious things that can happen to someone. And so turning that on the other side, if we have responsibilities to others, which I think we do, then encouraging others is an important thing to keep track of. Sometimes we get so busy, so ground down, so nose to the grindstone that we don't even notice other people around us have done something smart or good, or maybe they're suffering or whatever. So it's a measure of how much your nose is around and your antennas are up, noticing other people and then giving something of yourself. It's another one of those very interesting etymology exercises. The word courage comes from Latin cor, C-O-R, which means heart. And the Romans thought that their courage, which they went to war because they went to war all the time, of course, that the courage came from their heart because their heart beat faster as they were going into war. So they thought that their heart was the source of their courage. So that's a very direct etymology. Cor becomes courage. En means to put or to place. And so when you encourage someone, it means that you are putting your heart into them, which is a lovely gift and a lovely lift. Yeah.
Question number 9.
Yeah.
Seemed counterintuitive.
Yeah.
How often do you consider your own aspiration? I read it. How do you think of yourself? Think about yourself.
That's right. But that's okay, because there's some people who've become, so this is, all of these questions kind of get at different levels. There are a fair number of people in the world who have become so accustomed to giving in to others that they don't even consider their own hopes and dreams and passions and aspirations. Because the only things that we can control are three things: behavior, aspirations, and attitude. That's what we can control, is our own. We can't control. I was once asking an audience, you know, what can you control? And somebody said, your children. And everybody broke into hysterical laugh. Right. It's just that kind of cackly laughter, you know, wah. And he said, okay, well, where you place a 2-month-old. Okay, I'll buy that. But so what we can control are our aspirations and our attitudes and our behavior on a good day when we've had possibly some chocolate and a good night's sleep. That means that our aspirations are really important and that we need to stand up for our own aspirations. And sometimes as people give up their own hopes and dreams for others, that's not a healthy thing either, because that leads to boredom and that leads to disappointment and that leads to draining of energy. You think, why bother? Somebody else is kind of ruling me. So that's what that's about. It's okay to stand up and say, wait a minute, let's work this out. Last time I moved, the last three times we moved, honey, it was for your career. That's my turn.
You know, just quickly, you're talking before the group here that you know, you tell someone what to do and they don't want to listen to me. And it's probably better for me not to tell them and inspire them to do something, because it's sort of a waste of time. It's better to inspire me to do something. What do you think about that?
Well, what we think is,
they don't want to change their habits.
If a person has a tragedy or a complaint or a trouble, one possibility is saying, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. That is so hard. And then, because that shows that you've listened and you're not just going into the problem-solving mode. The next thing that some people do is they say, how are you going to deal with that? Which then shows your confidence in the other person, because they certainly have given it some thought. And if there's a great silence, then, you know, then you can start in a conversation. But advice is not often welcomed by everyone, I guess you found. All right. So that's Renew-O-Meter. Let me just say about the Renew-O-Meter, it's online. It's in the book. It's everywhere, and you can get it. And people can, you know, print it out many copies and use it at work, at church or mosque or temple or wherever it might be. And you can people use it with their spouses or their partners or their whole family members and so forth and so on. So it's meant to be used. Questions or comments so far? Whatever. Yeah. Yes, we're working on it. We're going into high gear. Okay, and what do you want to know about? What do you want to?
I know, afraid you're going to run out of time. You're being very interactive, which is great, but you have a lot to say.
Well, it's true, and we'll move along. The thing is that it turns out that you have the answers. And what we're trying to do here is just open up some possibilities of ways of thinking and ways of approaching some perhaps knotty, long-standing puzzles. Everyone here is smart. Everyone here is wise. Everyone here has instinct. And everyone here has some very, very good answers to what's on your mind, including juggling. So let me just say one thing about procrastination, because it's something that a lot of people do. There are many reasons for it, but one of them is that we want to be perfect. And so the perfect way of not making a mistake is not to start. And that's what I'm saying about procrastination. The perfect way of not making a mistake is not to start, not to do anything. And so people can embellish. I mean, it's much more important to clean the closet than it is to start that poem or whatever you don't want to do. But it turns out, then it becomes a very destructive kind of a habit.
I need something
to start. Well, one is be aware of what's going on. And in fact, nobody's perfect. You know, oriental carpets all have errors in them because only Allah is perfect. So nobody's perfect. So what's the quest? So just get on with it. Try it. I mean, you know, there's no such thing as failure. So let me talk about ways to... See, if we're talking about juggling, it's awfully important to be juggling the right things. And... as I was taught by a wise person, there you can be juggling several different kinds of things. Some are glass and some are rubber. Some will shatter if you drop them, and some will bounce. And it's awfully important to know which is which. And the elements of juggling that tend to shatter, if they're not done right, tend to be relationships and important parts of your lives that you value. Things that bounce could be a committee, could be
maybe not meeting a deadline because, you know, a day later, you know, oh well. It's important to know which is which, and it's awfully important not to pick up the balls that are made out of cement and razor blades and, you know, axe handles and things like that. Because there are some balls that nobody has picked up, and you don't have to either. And that could be the chair of a particularly difficult committee. It could be taking on a particularly difficult task at work or in an organization. You don't have to do it. Maybe it takes two people to do the work. Maybe that job is just way too hard. In our neighborhood, it's interesting, in our neighborhood association, everybody kind of has the feeling that we should have an emergency supply system. I mean, like an emergency supply building with emergency supplies. And, you know, water and food and, you know, Band-Aids and, you know, and all. I mean, we live in earthquake territory, and so we got this. And so, in fact, the neighborhood collected money, and it gets $5,000 or $6,000. Nobody wants to chair the shed. Nobody wants to do the emergency supply doodah. And so the money is in the bank. I think that's very smart. If nobody wants to do it, well, then don't spend the money on getting a shed that's covered with moss or kudzu vines or whatever it is after a while. So it's kind of like that. You don't have to pick it up if it can't be done or if you're already overloaded. So this is how, and this is sounding a little instructive, but I want to do what you want to do. One way to know when to say yes and no, when to pick up a ball, either whether it's a rubber ball or a glass ball, leave aside the ones with the razor blades and the cement and the axe handles and stuff, is to know your values. And when when you know your values, you can make very smart decisions. When you know your values, that is what helps you know how to live your life. And when you live your values, that's what gives you meaning. And when you have meaning in your life, that's what brings joy. And in the Occident, which is where most of us live most of the time, having meaning in your life is the most important element. And however you define meaning is, again, you have the answers. The answers are here. Your answers are your answers. Meaning could be any number of things. Could be, I once asked a group about how do you define success? And the first person said $1 million. And the next person said learning how to die well. And I asked another group about success. And one person said, being CEO. And the next person said, having my teenager talk to me. All of these answers are correct for that person. So, and that whole idea of success and meaning are tied together. And when you have that kind of meaning in your life, then that brings the joy. The quest is not for happiness. That's a consequence. The quest is for meaning. So let's just do this list. And how I define values is how you decide what's good and bad and right and wrong. Good and bad, right and wrong. How at the end of the day or the end of the week or the end of your life you might like to have on your headstone or in your obituary, she did such and such, he did such and such, or was a friend to all, whatever it might be. And shared values is what keeps a family together and a neighborhood together and a business together, a clinic together, whatever it might be. So talking about values is a very important thing to do in a family, in a neighborhood, in a company, in a hospital, in a clinic. So, thinking about you and your cousin and or books that you may have read or headlines that you may have seen, just shout out some values.
Balance.
What?
Balance.
Balance. authenticity.
Advanced yoga.
Modesty.
Modesty.
Honesty. Honesty, sorry.
Integrity.
Integrity. Concern for others.
Reduce suffering.
Relieve suffering, did you say?
Reduce
suffering. Reduce suffering. Conserve yourself.
Concern
for others, for self.
Listening.
Faith.
Transparency.
Sorry?
Humility.
Humility.
Doing your best.
Doing your best.
Being happy.
Being happy.
Enjoying life.
Enjoying life.
Relaxation.
Relaxation. Creativity.
Very,
very healthy.
Golden rule.
Sorry?
The golden rule.
Golden rule. Which the golden rule is in every culture. In every culture. Sometimes it's said different ways, but it's in every culture. That where there's an understanding of godlike people or higher powers. Well, we could go on and on. So this is your homework. One is to think about your values and to write them down and to say them out loud. Just as we said at the very start, that some people learn by writing, some people learn by hearing, and if you do both, it turns out the neurophysiology is such that you're going to get more of an imprint. Talk with your dear ones about their values, because, as I said, shared values are what hold us together as small or large groups. And check where you work, particularly if you work for money, or if you volunteer, or both. Do those values mesh with your values? Because that is a source of energy, and if they don't, that's a source of exhaustion. As you know your values, then you can make decisions about saying yes or no, about taking on some additional balls to juggle. Because if you take all the balls on to juggle, you won't do anything well. And those of us who have obsessive compulsive trait, not disorder, trait, like to do things well. You can't do everything well. And that gives you permission to say no. And one of the things that actually is in the book, because we are out of time, is the no sandwich. It's kind of coaching you how to say no. Sometimes people who are so accustomed to saying yes all the time, and I must admit that it's some men and many, many women say yes a lot more than is good for us. Sometimes you have to look in the mirror and you have to go, no. You kind of have to, no, no. You have to, you know, act it. So, anyway, thank you very much. I'm going to be here, and I loved you.
Our thanks to Dr. Linda Clever for her comments here today. We also thank our audiences here as well as those listening to this recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 110th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.